On this episode of The Autumn Windbags, we get into how Mike Florio twists his journalistic foundation just to keep dumping on Derek Carr. And speaking of QB1, we react to Carr's recent interview that he did this week. Talks about the Khalil Mack trade, his memory, Gus Bradley's new defense, a bunch of stuff. Plus, we welcome onto the program BD Williams to discuss all things Raiders. This episode is brought to you by our friends at Nirvana CBD at nirvanacbd.com. Use promo code AW20 for 20% off. Nirvana CBD, find your state of natural relaxation. And we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into the nightmares.
The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto. We are just 68 days away until opening day for the Raiders, Monday Night Football, Baltimore Ravens coming to town. One away from the sexy number, but 68 is closer than 69, so I'll take it.
68, and I'll owe you one.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're Andre James away, so we're good. We're good.
One Andre James
number 68.
Nice. Yeah. Yep. This is a good little exercise to remind us of like all these new players or old players and what their jersey numbers are. This is nice.
Well, wait a second. Do you know what the speed of sex is, RJ?
68 miles an hour. Because if you hit to 69, you got to turn around.
No, it's 68 because when you get to 69, you eat it.
See, I heard, mine was like the middle school version of the joke, and yours was like the junior college version of the joke.
You just killed the whole joke, bro.
I stick with the classics. I thought depending on the naivete and.
What do you turn around? What are you turning around in 69? How do you 60? Like,
you got to turn around.
How do you turn? Like, I don't even want to think about it.
You got to do a 180 on top of them. Right.
No, so you're saying turn around. It's like turn them around. Like,
yeah. So if
face them back way.
Let's say she's riding you, right? Parallel ride.
Okay. Cowgirl.
She does a 180 on top of you, spins all the way around, and then shimmies back. You're 69.
Okay.
You got to turn around.
I guess you might call that turning around. To me, is like you turn them like from facing you to like not facing you.
Cowgirl to reverse cowgirl.
Sure.
Missionary to doggy. See, it's inverted, like in Top Gun.
Like Maverick?
Exactly. We're doing international relations. You know, the bird.
Whatever, man. It works. Anyway, either way, it works.
Long story short, we're one day short of 69 days away from opening day, and it can't come soon enough. So a lot to get to on this episode. And this is a very Derek Carr heavy episode. So you're going to be basically suicidal by the end of the show because of how much you hate our QB1. But I think even you will like this.
I don't even know why you say that, but okay.
So last show, we talked heavily about how Tom Brady did that interview in HBO, did the shop, and said, this team didn't want me. That motherfucker got pissed. And according to Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk, he said that there's two sources that told him, called him up, had to get it off their chest and tell him that that guy was Derek Carr and that team was the Raiders. And we both discussed that. And we were just like, I'm not buying it. Like, one, Tom Brady only goes to teams with phenomenal defenses, which not the Raiders.
Not us.
Two, Derek Carr's QB1. And we've talked about this. Whether you think Carr's the guy of the future or not, John Gruden has made it very clear, abundantly clear, through his words, through his actions, through everything, that he's sticking with Derek Carr, that he's the guy. So we shot a lot of holes in it. So lo and behold, this story just came out. Derek Carr's been doing some interviews. He talked to Chris Collinsworth. Rochelle shares some of that. He also talked to the brother from another show on Wednesday. And this is what he said. From what I know, it wasn't me, which is good. I know you've got the rings, but if it's not me, then we're good. What I heard, it wasn't me. And so I'm good with that. So great. Like that. That seemed like the common sense thing, but it's nice to hear that we got another source, right? Derek Carr said, yeah, someone I really trust, someone, because he has really no reason to make this up, right? Like, why would he lie that Tom Brady wanted to go to that team, right?
Yeah.
Well, and why would he care either way, right? Like, he has really no reason. It doesn't benefit him to lie either way.
It's in the past. It's like, what does it matter? I'm the quarterback still. I'm going to be the quarterback for a while. It's like, it just screams of there's nothing else in the news right now. Let me try to drum something up because I'm a piece of shit. I'm just going to call him fuckface from now on.
Yeah.
Florio from now on. When I say fuckface, I mean this bitch. Yes.
MF-er. Mike Florio, motherfucker, fuckface.
Fuckface.
This isn't even the biggest fuckface thing about Florio. This is where I, like, because he's doing what not a lot, you know, what a lot of other journalists do, right? You get an anonymous source, someone tells you something, you make a story about it, right? I think Florio was being manipulated by whoever put that up, especially how he put it. They contacted me. They wanted me to know, to say this. It's like, okay, Florio, you were being used by somebody to put the story up. That's kind of how I see it going. But then when Pro Football Talk did the story on this interview, this is what he said.
Without knowing.
So this is what he said. This is Mike Florio talking after he made that quote. Without knowing the source, it's impossible to know how good it is. Coach John Gruden, for example, has a well-earned reputation for saying whatever he needs to say in whatever situation. Regardless, there's only one source who knows for sure, and it's Brady. Hopefully someone will eventually ask him. So Florio throws cold water on that story because it absolutely contradicts his story.
Exactly.
His story from multiple people with deep connections to the NFL's matrix who have reached out in the past 24 hours to express a belief that the unnamed team was the Raiders. This was Florio's words 2 weeks ago in the original story. So this is what this guy is doing. He's saying, oh, Derek Carr, we don't know if we can trust this source because he just said that there's one source and he didn't say who it was. Bitch, that's exactly what you just did 2 weeks ago to start the initial story. You said
it's the exact same thing he did.
In the most bogus language possible, multiple people with deep connections to the NFL's matrix have reached out. Not he did the work, but they reached out to him to tell him this. Florio, you were manipulated and you got what you wanted, right? You did a story. It made headlines. We talked about it. Other shows talked about it. We shot it full of holes because that's what that story deserves, to be shot full of holes. But we talked about it. I'm sure you got clicks on your website and it worked. You got what you wanted. Now that there's someone much more likely and far more on the inside, Derek Carr, had someone tell him, yeah, it wasn't you. And then you shit all over his source because it's anonymous. When you started this whole damn rumor mill based on anonymous sources. Okay, Florio, if you do work on anonymous sources, fine. Great. A lot of people do. Some journals, that's the only way they can do their work.
But don't shit on someone else.
But they don't shit on someone else for doing it.
That's why he's fuckface, bro.
That's what irks me about Florio. Like, you can not like Derek Carr. Like, that's fine. I'm friends with you and you want him to die and have his
corpse
by worms in the ground. Like, that's fine. Whatever. Like, we can still be friends. But you're consistent and you don't make up shit to trash Derek Carr or let you. And
no.
When you have been not discredited, but when your sources get trumped by another source, this is where you take the high road and say, okay, yeah, maybe I missed one. Maybe my sources were wrong. Who knows? But you don't go and just go completely against how you work your journalism to try to save face on a bogus story that you posted.
It doesn't make sense. It makes perfect sense for fuckface. It makes sense. But something interesting that I just saw about his quote, he says, without knowing the source, it's impossible to know how good it is. Then he says, Coach John Gruden, for example, has a well-earned reputation for saying whatever he needs to say in whatever situation. If you can look at it from this perspective, he may be hinting that John Gruden maybe may have been one of the sources, because he's saying, well, John Gruden will say whatever in any situation, whatever he has to say. So he told me one thing, but then he told Derek Carr another thing. I'm not saying it's true or not, but knowing fuckface and how he operates, it's almost like he's trying to drum up some more drama, because he's alluding to the fact that it can be said, or it can be gathered from that line right there,
yeah,
that, oh, he's dropping you a little hint that one of the persons that told him was John Gruden.
And does John Gruden have a reputation of as being like a bigger liar than other NFL coaches?
Not that, like, I'm aware of.
No, he doesn't. How does he have this reputation?
Liars, like, bro.
Spreading. Yeah, that's their job, is to deceit and throw your opponents off.
Dude, has anyone ever watched Hard Knocks when they're telling a guy, oh yeah, you're solid, just keep doing what you're doing, and they cut the guy? It's like, dude, like, they have to, man. Like, fucking fuck face, man, that guy.
Yeah. Just keep your foot in your mouth, Florio, and when it happens, leave it there. Like, you're just deeper hole.
Listen, fuckface, it's safe to say that RJ will never invite you to have beers in his truck bed hot tub.
0% chance he's getting invited.
That was a good time, though.
I had a great time in that thing. You see the photo?
I did.
The wife, the kid, all American flagged out.
I was there.
Yeah. It was a good time.
It was a good time.
So real quick before we get to our guest, you put this link out there, NFL rosters ranked for all 32 teams for 2021, yeah. ESPN Plus. Did you put this on here to depress us? Do you think it's correct? Do you think it's right? Why is it on here?
I've been on a kick because I know what we think about the Raiders going forward. I know what where we have some optimism and with some where we have some, you know, a little trepidation. And I'm interested in hearing what other people think about our improvements in our roster.
Yeah.
And as it's one thing to have a bad off season, but what does your roster look like overall?
Yeah.
And man, it's not great.
They ranked us 26th.
26th out of 32, which is not good. And in the NFL, say what you want to say, coaching does matter. But if you don't have the freaking players on the team, you're not going to win many games.
Yeah.
And they're saying that we're 26th ranked, our roster is number 26 in the league, they don't have very high hopes for us. Mm-hmm. I feel that next season is going to be tough anyway in division, because our division is a lot stronger. The teams are all got better.
Yeah.
But to be 26, look, I can't dismiss it, because a lot of the optimism that we have hasn't been seen on the field, right? A lot of the improvements in our line, a lot of improvements in our offensive line, a lot of improvements in our secondary, we haven't seen it on the field. We say, okay, well, this guy can play better, but we haven't seen it.
Yeah. Like we've talked about, the ceiling for so many of our young players are through the roof. They just haven't delivered yet, right? Like, that's been the issue. And oftentimes, like, I'm fine with constructive Raider criticism. And I think this is, I want to rank them 26. So I think this is semi-fair, because they actually pointed to the realities here. Like, so many times when the Raiders get credit or, get bashed on and saying, oh, they're going to be bad, or the roster is this terrible, or they should be ranked this low for whatever reason, it's, oh, Derek Carr can't win, or they torpedoed the offensive line and are punting on the season. It's all like bullshit reasons. At least they're accurate here. Like they said, biggest weakness.
These are very accurate. Yeah.
No. Biggest weakness. Defensive backs. Yeah. They haven't proven to be good.
They haven't proven it. The biggest X factor.
Jonathan Abram, Damon Arnett. Like, these guys have not delivered. Now, again, the ceiling is high, especially with Gus Bradley in a new season. But it's very fair to not rank them their potential, to rank them what they've done. So, hey, maybe it's lower than I think, but at least they're knocking the parts of the roster that deserve getting knocked.
Yeah. You know, they're talking about our receivers, how our receivers are unproven, which is, fuck, man, what do you want to say? You know, we can say that these guys are talented all we want. You got to show it on the field. And that's the main thing, is we got to see it. And that's what I've been saying all along, is, okay, we got the pieces, now let's go and put together. And that's what teams do, man. Good teams work together, and they're better as a team than they are as, you know, individual pieces. So we'll see how it works out. If they, you know, we we pull a 49ers from a couple of years ago when they were, oh, this team's going to be in last place in the NFC West and all this shit, and they end up fucking going to the Super Bowl. Mm. Like, okay, we'll see. We'll see if that works.
And I will give them credit, too, because they said X Factor in 2021, and they pointed to the linebacking core, which is true because, you know, the defense is, as a whole, is the X Factor, right? Basically, it's not so much individual players. It's can Gus Bradley turn this crew around and get the most out of the potential that we that we believe is there. But if you go specifically to a core group of guys, it is linebackers because they're the ones that aren't going anywhere. There are genuine backups at every position on defense. Defensive end, we've got like 10 defensive tackles, corner, safety. There's a young guy and a veteran that can be a starter at every one of those positions. Basically, like slot corner is still kind of up in the air, but both corner spots, free safety, strong safety. If you're not delivering, there's someone who can start right away.
Jump right in.
Linebacker? Not the case. Corey Littleton's not going anywhere. $35 million linebacker. Nick Wachowski? Not going anywhere. He's paid too much. So if the linebackers struggle terribly, they're not getting off the field this season. So that I think that's very right. Like they pointed to a very good X factor. These linebackers that we have to deliver because it is a ghost town behind them. DBs and defensive linemen, you don't deliver, someone else is up. Linebacker, Littleton and Kwiatkowski don't deliver, we're fucked.
We have what? We have transferred safeties at linebacker in those positions if they don't work out. So, yeah, it's going to be tough, man. And one another thing that I found interesting regarding next season and the expectations. So USA Today had the Vegas odds, and we talked about this before. The Vegas odds are something that you want to look at because that's where the money's put on the line, right? Yep. People are making money about this.
These rankings that we just talked about, there's
no money behind it.
If they're
no
consequences. Wrong. Betting odds, you better get it right or it's going to cost you.
So Vegas has these odds, okay, for the AFC West standings. This is Raiders Wire and USA Today. They have the Chiefs, for the best odds to finish first in the division, and the Raiders to the best odds to finish dead last in the division.
-225 2-1 favorites to finish last.
Yeah, 2-1 favorites to finish last. And
Chiefs are the Broncos that improved that they're not? That there's no chance they'll be last.
So I'm not saying Teddy Bridgewater is a great quarterback. I'm saying Teddy Bridgewater having a team around him like he has in Denver has won 11 games. And
the roster is kind of scary as a whole.
The roster is fucking good and it's deep and they're young and that's all he needs. They needed a plug and play quarterback who doesn't make mistakes and doesn't have to do too much and gets the ball to the playmakers. And that's what Teddy Bridgewater has been known to do when he had the playmakers around him. I went and looked last year, fucking CMC got hurt and that's the offense ran through him. He got hurt. So you just throw that out the window, man. Look, when he had a healthy, the fuck's his name? The running back in Minnesota.
Adrian Peterson?
Oh, not that guy.
Not that far back?
Not that far back. But anyway, when he had his running back and he had Diggs and Thielen and you know, he had pieces around him and a solid defense. He won a lot of games, man. And, you know, that's the Broncos. That's all they were missing. Was the quarterback. They had everything else, you know, and conversely, the Raiders are the best bet to finish last in the division, and the Chiefs are the worst bet to finish last in the division. So, I mean, that's what Vegas is saying, that we have the best odds to be in last place.
I think also betting odds also try to mimic what they think the market's going to be too, because the media has been really, really low on the Raiders off season moves, et cetera. Really, really high. I mean, obviously Chiefs for all the reasons that it should be. Chargers with the new coach, that's not going to just like piss away everything and have the special teams just be like a negative unit. And then Broncos with a new quarterback. So I think it's a couple things. I think it's a reflection of how much better the rest of the conference, the rest of the division's gotten, how much negative press the Raiders have gotten, which affects people's betting behavior. And also it's fair to say, like, give me a good reason why we should believe in the Raiders this season if you're on the outside.
Yeah, a lot of these guys, a lot of these predictors, prognosticators, stuff like that, they don't like to go with the ifs.
Yeah.
They want to know, this is what I've seen. And like I said about Teddy B, we've seen when he has a solid team around him, fucking guy wins the double digit winning wins a season. So, I mean, yeah. Our ifs in the wide receiver room, there's some there.
Yeah.
There's ifs in our on our entire defense. There's a lot of ifs. Can, you know, if Bradley can get them all together, if the linebackers play the way they can, if the secondary plays up to snuff. I mean, there's a lot of ifs there.
A lot of ifs, ands, or buts. All right. Let's go to our guest. BD Williams joins us next. All right. Joining us now, he's from the Tape Don't Lie podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at BDWilliams18. I asked him where he's doing his writing now, and he said, I have just received an offer that I'm going to get. I imagine you're just making sure the check's in the mail. There's enough commas and zeros on there to make sure they got you. So we'll tease it now. You can follow him on Twitter and find out where he's going to land later. BD Williams, now on the show. How you doing, BD?
Appreciate you guys having me on. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
Of course. Welcome, yeah. Man. Like we were telling you, we read comments and stuff on YouTube and everywhere else. And they said, you got to get you guys on for the Tape Don't Lie. And so I said, don't got to twist my arm. So here we are. So the big news this week, a lot of Derek Carr conversation, right? Did the interview with Chris Collinsworth, the conversation from 2 weeks ago that, like, you know, Tom Brady was like that motherfucker, like that was the guy that was the team that didn't let me, etc. Where do you put Derek Carr? This is like a very general question, so you can put it however you want, but like when you think of Derek Carr, like what first comes to your mind? Like franchise quarterback, he's gotta go, hot and cold. Like what do you think of Derek Carr as a writer for Raider Nation?
Yeah, you know, I am impressed with certain things that Derek Carr does. You know, I think obviously there's room for improvement. He's not infallible. Even the best quarterbacks have room for improvement. You know, certainly he's not like an all-time great or anything like that. But you know, you could do a lot worse than having a Derek Carr as your quarterback in the NFL. You know, and the way I look at it is there's 32 NFL teams. There are not 32 starting caliber NFL quarterbacks in the world. Okay. So when you're a team that does have a starting caliber NFL quarterback, that's usually a good thing, a really good thing for your franchise. And I think that he played pretty well last year. I think he had his best year as a pro last year. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he can keep on building on that. And, you know, we see some of the areas where, you know, Raiders fans get a little upset about him not extending plays, some ball security issues that, you know, make them kind of upset. But hopefully we can see an improvement there. But, you know, for the most part, I'm a Derek Carr fan.
See, that hurts Soto's feelings because he hates Derek Carr, wants him gone, wants his kids to starve, wants his wife to
RJ
cry,
just pushes this
despises
narrative.
QB1. So why do you think that is? Because like I'm with you. Like he's statistically he had his best season last season, better than 2016. I don't remember anyone saying Derek Carr had to leave after that 2016 season. Why? Because the defense wasn't dog shit, and so they won 12 games and went to the playoffs. Right? Is it as simple like the Derek Carr hate? Is it as simple as the team doesn't win and so it's just on the quarterback? Is it that simple?
I understand why fans are frustrated when there's constant losing seasons or not making the playoffs, especially when the quarterback and the head coach look like they're here to stay for the long run. So 100% understand why Raiders fans are frustrated. Winning will cure all. So we'll see if that happens.
I just want to make something clear here, okay?
Okay.
RJ pushes this shit every single episode. He drops it, and everyone and the people are like jumping on it. Like, oh, you hate Carr.
You made it abundantly clear.
I don't hate Derek Carr. Okay.
Yes, you do.
I actually wrote it down. Just the next time that he freaking tries to pull this shit, here's my take on Derek Carr. Derek Carr is a great game manager. He takes command of a huddle and runs an offense pre-snap as good as anyone in the league. Okay. A steep regression against pressure. His risk averseness hurts in the red zone and when pocket is not clean. I feel he has not mentally recovered from his broken ankle when he panics to check down under pressure when bigger plays are open. BD, what say you to that?
Sounds like you hate him.
These are all valid criticisms, and they're definitely criticisms that we've seen before from him. There's definitely, you know, I'm a big football junkie. I would watch John Gruden when he would do his QB films, you know, rooms or, you know, QB camps with all these guys coming out, Marcus Mariota and Andrew Luck, you know, like over the years. And I remember there was like a phrase that he would constantly say to his quarterbacks, right, when he'd be going over film with them and over like throwing an interception. He's like, what about this guy down here in the flat? Right. That's the only play there. Mm-hmm. That's the only play to make. And we've seen Derek Carr go from being a guy who pushed the ball vertically under Musgrave, you know, in 2016, to a guy who checks the ball down now under a different coach. And I do think a lot of the checkdowns is because that's what Gruden wants. Gruden wants to stay on schedule. He'd rather have a check down for 3 yards than putting the ball in danger or an incompletion. So I really do think that this is an emphasis that Gruden makes with the checkdowns, for sure. And then, you know, as far as, you know, breaking the ankle, you know, having, you know, like issues and, you know, being antsy in the pocket, things like that. Yeah, he can improve his pocket presence, especially when there's someone around him and he needs to secure the football, you know. There are times, though, where we've seen him step up in the pocket, throw strikes down the field in 2020. Think about the Jets game. At the very end, he had to climb all the way up through the pocket. There was a lot of pressure on him, and he kept his demeanor and you know, threw a game-winning touchdown. So we see glimpses. We just want to see, as Raiders fans, and I completely understand why Raiders fans want to see it be more consistent and not just have glimpses of it.
Well, one thing about that Jets game, though, is there was no other play. Like, he had to do that. There was no choice in that matter. He couldn't check down. You throw it deep or you lose
the gloves are off. He didn't have Gruden holding him back. Like, that. Like that's, yeah, what, right? That's what I'm wondering is, like,
is he overcoached?
Yeah, is John Gruden more holding back Derek Carr than help? Because he's like you said, he played lights out last season. But the things that we loved about him in 2016 under Musgrave, he's not really doing as consistently now. So even though, like, Gruden's got this reputation, quarterback whisperer, great offensive mind, which he is, great play caller, which he is he just handcuffing his quarterback and wasting his best years on dink and dunks?
Yeah, I think this is the issue that a lot of, like, scheme guru, offensive gurus have.
Quote,
they, unquote. Right. Regardless if we're putting Gruden in this category, the Shanahans, the Sean McVays, right? Mm-hmm. They don't want quarterbacks who improvise. They don't want quarterbacks who go off schedule. They want quarterbacks to execute their play call, right? And you see that kind of bite some of these guys in the foot at times. You look at, you know, Kyle Shanahan's record in big games, right? You look at Sean McVay couldn't get over the hump with Jared Goff, right? They value quarterbacks who are in rhythm, passers, game managers. That's what they want. And I think that in that category of quarterbacks, Derek Carr is, you know, just as good, or close to as good as any of the game manager quarterbacks in the NFL. So, you know, that's who he is. And, you know, we'll see if there are going to be times where Derek Carr needs to overcome coaching a little bit, like you're saying, Soto.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that certainly is an element with John Gruden offenses overcoaching for sure. He puts a lot, he asks a lot from guys.
How would you go ahead, Soto.
Yeah. One thing in relation to that, Derek Carr's average, ADOT, the average depth of target under pressure, he was 18th in the league. So he's captain check down under pressure specifically. And you see the top five. What was the top five? It was like Brady, Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Watson. It's like those are like the – you know, those guys were the – Mahomes. It was like the top five. It's like under pressure, these guys make you pay, right? And it's I'm not saying – I think that Derek Carr is very talented. I think he has great arm talent. I think he throws a nice, pretty deep ball.
But you want him to die.
You see this? You see what I'm working with, dude? You see what I'm working with?
I can read your mind, Soto. Your lips are doing this, but I can read your mind, and I know what you're thinking.
I have put you underneath Florio now. Florio is above you now,
RJ. I didn't think that was possible. We did a whole Mike Florio bashing session before
you ask a question, RJ. You just shit over my question. Go ahead.
Well, just responding to Soto. I mean, you can't throw deep if the guys aren't running deep, right? For Derek Carr, and in a John Gruden offense, when wide receivers, this is a responsibility for them in the offense. When they see a blitz coming, they run what's called a side adjustment. Okay, where they're going to go replace where that blitzer came from. Okay, usually it's going to be a drag route, a slant route, maybe an out route. They're going to be shallow routes. Okay, when they see blitz, it's called a side adjustment. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at the Chiefs, when you look at Bruce Arians' offense under Tom Brady, these are more vertically oriented offenses where they have targets running deep, right? So when there is pressure, that's where the ball is going to go, because oftentimes you'll see Patrick Mahomes and he refuses to check it down, and that's why he lost to the Raiders in Week 5, because the checkdowns were open and he refused to take those. Okay, so there's competing schools of thought here. Certainly in the Raiders offense, guys are going shallow more often than they're going vertical, so that's where Derek Carr is going to throw the ball, because that's where the guys are.
Do you think that's more of like Gruden sticking to the system and not wanting to change, or Gruden not really having a lot of confidence in his wide receiver core?
I mean, yeah, this is Gruden's system. It's here to stay. It's not going to all of a sudden turn into an air raid, 4 verticals, every other play type of system. It just won't. Don't bank on that, Raider Nation. He wants a ball control, dink and dunk, check down, game managing offense. He wants to be on the field for 14, 15 plays. That's a successful drive for John Gruden. A successful drive for like the Andy Reid's is a 3-play drive that was, with an explosive 80 play.
80 yards.
And it only takes 2 minutes off the clock. John Gruden wants to take 10 minutes off the clock when he's out there on offense, right?
God forbid the opposing offense gets the ball and our fucking defense has to go out there with its pants down.
Exactly. So that's the way that's going to be. Unless this defense all of a sudden becomes just like top 10 defense in the NFL, you're not going to see the offense taking a bunch of chances.
Well, let's talk about the defense, because, you hear like – we reassess the Raiders and their offseason and their personnel and all the changes. It's like, Derek Carr, what's it going to be? What kind of, 2 running backs with Drake and Jacob, what's it going to look like? All that is so minor. If Gus Bradley can't get the defense playing semi-coherently, nothing else matters. Like, you're just not going to win in the NFL with a defense that ranks like 32nd, like just absolutely atrocious. So like we talk so much about like, all right, can Corey Littleton get his act together? Where Jonathan Abram figure things out? Where Yannick Ngakoue could make a giant difference? It's like none of these – I don't feel like any of these individual players are really all that crucial. It's can Gus Bradley get that crew as a whole to succeed? Like that's kind of how I look at the whole defense. So when you look at the defense next season, BD, like is there a ceiling you expect? Are you expecting something drastic? Are you expecting certain players to improve or get worse? Are you with me on Gus Bradley? Like, kind of how do you foresee this defense next season with what you know so far?
Yeah, I'd say that we're going to be in for at least a slightly pleasant surprise with the defense. The biggest difference between Paul Gunther and Gus Bradley is Paul Gunther had a huge volume in his defensive game plan. He wanted to be able to have any call at his fingertips, any coverage at his fingertips, and what happened was guys weren't able to actually practice what was being called in the game.
You heard Will Compton say on his podcast, right, They'd have 25, 30 plays on just third downs every week.
And another issue with that, also with the amount of installation time that takes in offense and in practice, now you can't focus on your back pedal. You can't focus on your press technique as much, right? You can't focus on film study because you're trying to learn the playbook. This is going to be much more scaled down for Gus Bradley. And that what is going to result in, you're going to see better fundamentals, better technique, better, anticipating what the offense is going to bring, because you have more time now to learn the offense's plays, because you're going to be in single high 75% of the game. You're only going to get so many looks, right? And I think that having a cohesive identity on defense is going to kind of dictate what the offense is going to send to you. Whereas before, there was no identity, there was no cohesiveness. You could get anything on any play, and defense often was not ready.
How would you grade this offseason so far? Because the Raiders and most of the media have been bashed pretty hard with their offseason, and you know, they dismantled their O-line. What are they doing signing such an expensive backup running back? Their draft sucked, etc. Do you feel like this offseason has been as bad as it's kind of led on, or do you see some positives?
Yeah, I think you know, it's been kind of tough to talk about with a lot of Raiders fans because they're so passionate, and you know, a lot of times they're not allowing to, you know, objective analysis. But Rodney Hudson has been on the decline, especially in the run game, for several seasons now. There was, you know, quite a few games where the Raiders could not get any traction up front, and he was getting his butt whooped as a run blocker. Okay, he's always been a great pass protector, but as a run blocker, he has a tough time moving the better defensive tackles, especially like guys like Quinnen Williams dominated him. Okay,
yeah, whooped him.
So, whooped him, right? So, you know, yeah, I understand why Raiders fans are upset. Gabe Jackson as well missed a lot of blocks in the run game. John Gruden, again, we go back to it. He wants to be a ball control oriented offense. When you got a musical chairs of offensive line, you got no cohesiveness, so you can't run a zone scheme because that's what they want to do. They want to run a zone scheme. The zone scheme means everyone has to be on the same page, and you have so many moving parts. They're just scrapping the whole thing, and they're trying to start fresh from the beginning, hopefully getting guys that are just there and available each and every week. It's really tough to win in the NFL when you have so many offensive line injuries. So I think that's what they're hoping on. They're just hoping on, you know, a more stable core of guys to run the offense.
Younger guys that don't get hurt as much, right?
Younger guys that don't get hurt as much, but there's going to be hiccups. There's going to be bumps in the road. It is what it is, but if you go back and you actually look at the film, okay, you look at how often Gabe Jackson missed an assignment or got beat. If you look at how often Rodney Hudson on zone schemes would get pushed into the backfield and, you know, make or put Josh Jacobs into a bad situation.
How many times Trent Brown was on the sideline in street clothes eating fruit roll-ups?
Yeah, so there were bumps in the road last year too. So, I mean, it had to be done. I would say that the departure that I'm most discouraged about is Nelson Aguilar not coming back. I went on another podcast and I said, I bet he'd make like $13 million a year just looking at what the contracts are in the NFL. And he went and made $13 million a year. So I knew it was going to be too expensive for the Raiders to keep. He had such an instant chemistry with Derek Carr. And I was really looking forward to like seeing what that would look like with an off season. Unfortunately, we're not going to see what that turns out to be, but I do think a guy like Kenyon Drake is a better gap scheme runner than Josh Jacobs and has a lot of juice. He was like the second fastest, third fastest ball carrier in the NFL last year. Where the areas where Josh Jacobs struggles in a little bit, Kenyon Drake can go and do those things really well.
Yeah, it's like one of those things that I've been hearing a lot of why the Raiders had a bad offseason is, oh, you paid this much for a backup running back. And it's like, you can't really think of Drake as a backup running back because he's going to have a lot of packages just for him. He's not going to run a lot of Jacob stuff. They're going to run similar stuff back and forth, but he's going to have packages just for him. So he's his own specific weapon. He's not, quote unquote, just a backup running back.
Yeah, and especially, you know, Josh Jacobs has failed to get through 16 games in two seasons right now. You know, you want him to be healthy, okay, because he's, you know, almost as good of a zone runner in the NFL as there is, okay, top five zone scheme running back in the NFL. But at the same time, you want him to be healthy. So maybe he scales back some of his carries and Kenyon Drake can get more touches and they can even it out a little bit like that. But, you know, you are only as good as your depth in the NFL, okay? And someone like Kenyon Drake, I think he was misused in Arizona. If they put him in fun situations, just the threat of Kenyon Drake splitting out wide, Kenyon Drake getting a direct snap, even if they do it like once or twice a game, it's something that the opposing defense now has to focus and game plan for and practice against. So a plays that might only happen like two or three times a game, right? That's invaluable. So I do think Kenyon Drake is a great signing. I don't believe in running backs don't matter and all that stuff. I like Kenyon Drake the player, and I think he adds a explosive dynamic element to this offense for sure.
And depth, like it's obviously always good and invaluable. but specifically for the Raiders, when back-to-back seasons have fallen apart late in seasons as guys get hurt, get on injury reserve, and fall off. Like, it's been a very much more noticeable of an issue for the Raiders because of how their seasons have fallen apart and guys just haven't been able to be available. So it's like, yeah, Jacobs is not there. Kenyon Drake's great. Every single starting wide receiver position, I'm really confident in who's ever backing him up, right? Like, whether it's Edwards or Brown, or if Ruggs finally gets his act together, like there's Snead's backup for Renfro. Like, there's quality depth at every single position at offense now. And I don't know if you saw it, but Bill Barnwell, one of Bill Barnwell's podcast, ESPN, he had this thing where he counted like how many starting offensive line squads never missed a snap. Like, no one got hurt. Everyone played all 16 games, started all 16 games, all five positions. He said it only happened 10 times in the last like 15 years. And like eight of them went to the Super Bowl. Like, it's that huge. So instead of dumping all this money on an offensive line of 30 something year olds are going to get hurt, cheaper dudes who have experience, like, that's one of the benefits. And Derek Carr said on the Collinsworth podcast, like, one of the benefits of having a bunch of injuries on the line last season is all these backups got reps. Like, Andre, like, all these guys got some reps. So I'm with you. Like, that depth is so important. And like, that's one of the critical errors that the roster of the Raiders has had for a while. It's just no depth, which on every part of the field, there's depth now. Like, even though our DBs still suck, like, you've got legit four starting corners, legit four starting safeties. Like, I think that's outside of the defense improving. That's the biggest improvement I can say this offseason, the biggest positive.
Yeah, I definitely think the depth on defense is way better, miles better than it was before. I think that there's a lot of competition at key spots. Even look at middle linebacker Nicholas Morrow against Nick Rakowski. That'll be a fun camp battle to monitor. You know, you got Malcolm Kuntz backing up Yannick Ngakoue. You know, all these three technique interior defensive linemen that they brought in, working, you know, that's going to be a huge camp battle. So yeah, I do think that the depth at almost every position is just drastically improved over what it has been in the past.
So John Gruden's heading into his fourth season in his second stint with the Raiders. Not a winning season yet, obviously no playoffs, but I like it's hard because you want to judge, like, you judge anything in life by what you've done. What have you accomplished, right? Like, that's how you judge them. It's very hard to gauge where they're going to go next. So obviously John Gruden, the last few seasons, you got to consider it a failure, but I do like the direction it's going. Like, offense is getting better. I'm starting to see some cohesion in defense, a plan on defense, special teams is doing fine. Like, how do you grade John Gruden in his first three seasons, and how do you think things are going to be going moving forward if he does all 10 seasons of his contract?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say I would give him like B minus, C plus, you know. We've seen the offense improve.
So far,
yeah. We've seen the offense improve. So on that aspect, you know, it's one of the most efficient offenses in the NFL last year. Despite all the injuries on the offensive line, they're still able to move the ball. They were, you know, they had like some of the best number of like drives number of plays in a drive and things like that. Obviously, the red zone was an issue. But that stems back to not being able to run the ball because you have a tattered offensive line. But he's the head coach, so he deserves blame for the defense, you know. So if his defense is – or if his offense is like A-minus, B-plus, the defense is like an F. It brings down the grade. And, you know, that was on him for hiring that staff and not recognizing soon enough that, you know, it was not working and that the approach was not working. So, you know, hopefully he's corrected it. It's a little late in the game, and a lot of these players were brought in to be in a different scheme. And now, you know, we're going to see who actually works in Gus Bradley's scheme and who doesn't. So it's probably not going to be, you know, year one for Gus Bradley. It's going to be maybe year two or year three if they get that much time, you know, where Gus Bradley can start picking his guys that he wants. But, yeah, he deserves the blame for the defense being so bad. He made all those hires. He did not fire anyone soon enough. So, yeah.
That's what I was saying. It's like why bring him back for year three? Why bring Gunther back for that third year? You saw that the defense regressed so much from the first to second year. And you saw what Will Compton said. You saw that he's, or maybe he didn't see, maybe he didn't, he wasn't in the room enough, or he didn't talk with the guys enough to know that he's not teaching these guys anything. He's just throwing a bunch of schemes at them. He's not coaching up fundamentals. He's not making sure the defense looks, especially the secondary. RJ and I would always joke that even two guys like us who don't know what the fuck we're talking about, we can see that the DBs are looking at each other up until, and they're chattering up
you?
Until the snap.
Was it you? Like what?
Yeah, huh? It's every time. It's like they're talking, they're up lost. Until the snap. It's like they're lost. They're completely lost, and there's too many wide open big plays. It's like, yeah, man, you let that shit happen from year two to year three. Why bring them back for that third year? It's you saw that it wasn't working.
All right. Yeah. My co-host on, you know, the Tape Don't Lie film channel on YouTube, Marcus Johnson, he brought up a great point that John Gruden had never fired a coach before. So
I didn't realize that.
I think that definitely played into his decision to bring Paul Gunther back. He was hoping against hope that we'd see an improvement there. But Paul Gunther's the first coach that he ever fired.
Wow. Mid-season, no less.
Soto, even you could survive on that coaching staff then.
Yeah, you know what?
Gruden just won't fire anyone.
Challenge accepted.
Who'd have thought Gruden was such a big old softy, right? Like, hear how he just, like, berates his quarterbacks and, like, comes down on people, even though he's, like, a fun guy. He's, like, never – like, nothing's ever good enough. He just can't fire any coordinators.
I think he's just so focused on his own shit. He just doesn't even – he's not even, like,
worried about it. He doesn't want to deal with it. Yeah, I wouldn't think of defense. I've got 90,000 spider-wide bananas to put together. Like, why would I care about this? All right, his name is BD Williams. Check him out on the Tape Don't Lie show on YouTube. He has a new writing home, which you're not going to know about until he says so. So just be patient. Follow him on Twitter as well at BDWilliams18. This is great, BD. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, BD.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. You guys are a blast. You got great energy. Appreciate it. Thanks, Raider Nation.
All right, thank you, BD. That was awesome. Appreciate it. So Derek Carr has been generally pretty quiet this offseason, but there's been just a mountain of Derek Carr talking in the last few weeks. The OTAs, he had, you know, mandatory media. He's been on a couple podcasts. I highly recommend you check out Derek Carr on Collinsworth's podcast. About an hour long, a lot of great stuff in there. We could do three podcasts just dissecting what he said in that 50 or so minutes, but there was four main things he brought up that I want to get to. The first one, Derek Carr was asked about every single offseason, every single midseason, every time there's a disgruntled quarterback, trade rumors pop up. Collinsworth acting what that was about. And this was his answer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know how that goes. Anytime you don't make the playoffs, that's what they talk about. They go to the quarterback or the head coach. It's one or the other. You know, and I talked to Aaron, you know, I know Aaron. So I was like, all right, guys, this is enough. You know, I think the rumors are getting a little out of hand now, but I'm so used to it now, which I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing. I'm so used to it, to hearing them, that honestly, like, it's funny to say this, cause that used to bother me, you know, cause even when I was a young player, like, I cared so much about making everybody like me, you know, I was going to work hard. I was going to do things the right way. I was going to give it all that I had on the football field, try and dive over people, whatever it takes to win. And you find out that even when you do those things, you're not going to please everybody. And it really, I had to grow as a person, you know, because I can't please everybody, especially as a Raider. You can't please everybody, you know, and I had to learn that. But now I just enjoy it because I'm so at peace with, I know what I've put on film, and I know how not only our organization, but other organizations I run into, you know, people all the time with other teams and whatever they do for those teams, you know, I'll leave that in my brain. But those conversations I've had with them, just the respect I get from those guys, I mean, that's what matters to me, you know, is that at the end of the day, I'm respected by the people, you know, within the business.
Okay. So the two big things that I got out of that, and one of them, he said multiple times how, you know, these rumors were getting out of hand and how he's gotten used to it, how he wanted to be a people pleaser for so long. And he wanted to please everybody. And he's still that guy at heart. Like, you can just tell, like, how he talks about John Gruden, how it's like, whatever Gruden wants, I'm going to do, good or bad, right? Even if it holds back parts of my game, I'm a soldier. I'm going to do what Gruden wants, and I'm going to do it to the best of my ability, and that's what I'm going to do. So it sounds like he still is him, but he's no longer trying to please the entire universe. It's just, I'm just going to please the people that matter. And the other part was, and he said this multiple times, I know what I put on film.
Yeah.
And I know what I'm capable of. And not only does that get respect from my team, but it gets respect from other people in the business. So all this criticism that he gets from diehard Derek Carr haters, such as yourself, Soto, he can keep himself at ease knowing that he puts quality tape together, and not only do his teammates love and respect him, and his coaches love and respect him, but other coaches, other quarterbacks, other players, other GMs in the league have noticed what he's doing and respect his game.
Yeah, it's he was a top 10 quarterback last year. He had good stats, and he's continuing to improve in that Gruden offense. And Beattie said it, you know, during his interview, he said, you know, a lot of these issues that you're seeing, that a lot of the criticism that I have of Derek Carr can be attested to Gruden and his offense, but not all of it. And, you know, when I say pressure, it doesn't necessarily mean being blitzed. It may, you know, be getting pressure from the defense. And there are, when I talked about this before, there are deep shots built into this system, more than your normal West Coast offense. Yeah. And I mean, I just wish that he would push the ball a little bit further down the field, like these Musgrave days. And it's not going to be the same, because Musgrave was more of a down the field type of offense. Maybe with a second year, with a couple of his receivers, and you have more than just one deep threat, who we had in Waller last year, and, you know, Aguilar. The only time he really threw it deep to Aguilar, honestly, is if he was wide open.
Yeah.
That's the only time he throws it deep. You could say, oh, he threw it deep to Aguilar. Yeah, he was fucking wide open. He still underthrew him, but we're not going to talk about that. But if he's wide open, he'll throw it to him. But it's like in the NFL, you know, guys aren't going to be wide open.
Get one of those a game, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
You scheme it, and okay, now the defensive coordinator sees it, and it's not going to happen again. But you got to –
God, we're so
I get what he's saying.
We're so lucky, because we're now in a league. Because you, like, I feel like the NFL is starting to kind of become like the NBA, where the stars in the NBA control everything. They control their coaches. They control recruiting, right? Like, they like LeBron is the Lakers. Like, he can hire and fire who he wants. Yep. His choice of coaches. He can pick. He can recruit any players he wants to come over. Like, that superstars in the NBA have all the power. In the NFL, it's the coaches and owners that have all the power, but it's starting to shift a little bit. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady literally got to pick where he wanted to go. Peyton Manning basically did that as well when he went to Denver. And you get these kind of like diva, me quarterbacks. And when things don't go right, you know, like Russell Wilson, all these other examples, they want to bounce, they want out, they start complaining. Derek Carr has 900 reasons to complain. And you never, ever hear a peep, ever. And that's obviously way low on the list of things I want out of a quarterback. I prefer you just be an amazing player, and if you're an asshole, whatever. But it is nice. Even you, Soto, can appreciate that the starting franchise quarterback for the Raiders loves being a Raider, doesn't complain, and just oozes positivity no matter how much shit he gets.
The squeaky wheel gets the grease. I would respect Derek Carr much more if – I'm not saying he doesn't do this privately, but I would respect him much more if I knew that he got into Gruden's face and got into Mayock's face and told them to get their shit together. Because what they've been doing so far just isn't good enough. Just isn't good enough. And I want my quarterback to say, you know what, fix this shit or I want out. Because you guys are fucking up left and right. My defense is fucking dog shit. You know, my receivers aren't working well. My best wide receiver I have is a guy that we picked up off the scrap heap. Like, fix this. And you know what? How many of these diva quarterbacks have been fucking moved? None. Because
so they're causing a ruckus, causing a distraction.
They're getting what they want. And the thing is here is, you have to look at it from this perspective.
They're getting what they want. not necessarily what's right for the team and right for their teammates. Tom Brady, was it best for the Patriots that he bounced? No. What's Aaron Rodgers doing that's so good for the Packers? Nothing. Like that's my point, is these, all these quarterbacks are me, which again, if you're making tens of millions of dollars and you have that kind of power and you can wield it, great. Derek Carr, what's best for the team? Me complete. And we don't know, Soto, if behind closed doors he is going to Gruden, it is going to Mayock, is going.
What about you has told you that he could, that he is that guy?
I don't think he is, because he's a soldier.
And that's a problem.
I don't
he's
think
not,
it is.
He's not a soldier. He needs to be a leader.
If he is, he's, you talk to any player on the roster of the Raiders.
Okay.
And they say, we love him.
What he's, you're telling guy, me right now is that he falls in line. That's not leader mentality. If a leader goes to the front office and says, you guys are fucking up, you guys have fixed it. And he's not doing that.
It's the command structure. All right. He's the leader of his players, and the coaches and GMs and owners are the coaches, GMs, and owners.
Look, when what was
he, it? He doesn't, like, want to rock the boat.
6 or 7 years ago, when they made all these rules about you can't touch the quarterback anymore and made everything so quarterback friendly, because these are the face of my franchise, we're giving them this much money. You had to know this was going to happen. You had to know that these quarterbacks are now going to start having more influence on your team because they're that much more important. And as a coach and as an owner, you can't afford to piss off your quarterback the way that fucking New England did to Brady all those years, trying to get rid of him and shit. And then now he's like, you know what? Fuck you guys. I'm out of here.
I don't know what you want Derek Carr to do. Yell at John Gruden because we haven't had a winning season. Like, do you think Gruden doesn't know that? You think he's sitting in his office saying, not until Carr was mad at me, am I going to try harder now? Dude, I don't know what the fuck you want him to do.
John Gruden is sitting back, feet up, no worries in the world.
You are so,
he knows he's not going anywhere.
First person in the parking lot at the in the building every morning. Last person.
What has John Gruden done differently? He hasn't done it. Like, he made a better hire because it was so obvious. It was so obvious that he should have gotten rid of Gunther after year two.
So what do you want Derek Carr to do about it? Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I want Derek Carr to get in Gruden's face.
What I'm saying is Gruden is very comfortable in his job. I'm not saying that he's complacent. I'm saying that he's comfortable, that he knows he's not going to get fired. Okay. There's no heat on Gruden. If he doesn't perform well, he's going to get shit from the media or whatever, but he's got a fucking contract for what? 6 more years.
And you think Carr's going to put that heat on him? Carr can't fire him.
Somebody has to do something. Well, I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to fucking play for this shitty team who
this
keeps
is exactly,
underperforming.
This conversation we're having right now, Soto, should be in a museum, because this is exactly what frustrates me about the hate that Derek Carr gets for stuff that isn't his fault.
You're starting to believe your own bullshit. I don't hate Derek Carr.
You just said, you started this conversation out with, like, Derek Carr needs to be a leader, needs to get in Gruden's face and do what? And then you're like, someone needs to do something. That there is the most honest thing you've said in the entire hour and a half we've done this podcast so far. Someone needs to do something, and so you choose Derek Carr to blame.
Derek Carr is the person we're talking about right now.
Why Derek Carr gets so much hate he doesn't.
That is not the because first off, we're talking about Derek Carr. Okay, number one, we're not talking about anyone else.
And you
talking about him already.
He needs to be a leader and make John Gruden get his act together. Like,
if you're saying he's the leader of the team. Mm-hmm. Okay, if he knows that there's issues that need to be fixed. No, who would know more than Derek Carr what the issues that need to be fixed?
You think Gruden doesn't know about those issues?
Praise him or hate him, because it's whenever it comes to Derek Carr, it's Gruden's fault. And now that I'm saying that Carr has to put more pressure on Gruden to be better at his job. Because no one's putting pressure on him. You're talking to me like I'm in a fucking NFL locker room right now. I'm saying this.
Someone has to do something.
You're saying that he has to. I'm not blaming Carr out of nowhere. He's the topic of conversation, and that's why I'm saying it. And I don't hate Derek Carr as much as you want to fucking say it, and all you little fucking RJ fucking dick sniffers out there. I don't hate Derek Carr, okay? Don't hate him.
There's only big RJ dick sniffers, all right?
Whatever. Fuck don't you guys, too.
On, don't be shitting on my dick sniffers.
Fuck those dick sniffers.
Well, speaking of making the players better, he was asked about Khalil Mack. Collinsworth asked Derek Carr about Khalil Mack. This is a story that's never going to go away. It was 34 months ago they made this trade. September of 2018.
It still hurts.
But I feel like we still get new pieces of information every time it's brought up. It's like, I would say, all right, the story is dead and buried. It's over. It's not. Nope. We get new stories every single time. This is what Derek Carr had to say about the Khalil Mack trade from September of 2018.
And Khalil, when he got traded, one, I couldn't believe it because, you know, the way it was set up, you know, the way I did my contract, the way we set it up, the way Gabe Jackson did his and all this kind of stuff, we were setting it up to where cap-wise and all that, it'd be easy to bring Khalil in. But it didn't end up working out for whatever reasons. I hope to know someday. and it didn't work out. But I know one thing is I would welcome Khalil back any day, because not just the player, obviously, but he's one of my best friends. And I wish him the best, except when he plays us.
So setting it up cap-wise to make room for him. The other, you're right, Khalil Mack.
And he did. You saw his contract. Everyone's saying how freaking great a contract
Khalil Mack
he
has. was the first round pick of that draft, right? Carr was second. Gabe Jackson was third. Carr and Gabe set up their contracts to be able to afford Khalil. Now, I'm not. That doesn't mean necessarily that like Carr took less money. You know how NFL contracts are. You can structure it. You know, you can make the exact same amount of money. Can structure it however way you want. Move this number here. Fucking plastic surgery it up. But they set it up to keep Khalil Mack, and they didn't. And Derek Carr, the quarterback of
still
that team,
still not happy about it.
Still not happy about it, but still two. No idea why. Not a clue. He's with John Gruden 21 of 24 hours a day and still has no idea why his homeboy Khalil got shipped off to Chicago and our defense just went into the dog shitter.
It's one of those things where if you have a Khalil Mack on your team, it's easier to fix the problems around it. If you have someone who's a disruptor like that.
Yeah.
Now, you don't have him, and I don't know that Khalil ever met Gruden in person.
He never did.
Never did. I just think that it screams of John Gruden wanted to nuke Lelouch and announce his presence with authority. No player is going to tell John Gruden what to do. Kiss the ring. You know, and that's what it sounds like. And it's one of the things you have to swallow if you're a Raider fan and you have John Gruden as a head coach. Is he has this fucking ego, and it's good or bad, you got to take it both.
So I still think that trade was the correct way to go. To be able to sign Khalil Mack and a franchise quarterback to what Mack got when he went to Chicago, like that was almost a third of the entire salary cap of the team. On two players, right? And we got a king's ransom for him, right? Two firsts, a third, a sixth.
What do we do with it?
Okay. Again, separate issue. Like, you're right. Like, who do we get for it? Josh Jacobs, cool. Blusown Austin, I don't even remember who that is. Damon Arnett, Brian Edwards. Arnett, not looking great. Edwards, not looking great. Futures, you know. Jury is still out on Arnett and Edwards. But, again, that's – to me, it's a separate issue. You got tangible value worth Khalil Mack and the cap space. You got the other
and the cap space.
Get the cap space, two for, you know, and all those draft picks, right? That has a value, regardless of what you do with it, right? Like $100 worth $100, whether you gamble it away or put it in a mutual fund, right? Those draft picks are worth something. And I still say that those draft picks were worth losing Khalil Mack plus cap space. Now, in typical Raider fashion, we drafted again. Jury is still out in Arnett and Edwards, but it doesn't look great.
Guess who the jury's not out on? Khalil fucking Mack.
Khalil Mack. We were able to hold him. We play him again this year. Looking for in Vegas. So this is a cool story. Like, we've heard stories about how John Gruden, tape guy, maniac, tape guy, Derek Carr, great at the line, great, you know, understands the offense, really smart guy, all that great stuff. Apparently, Carr is the smarter one of the two when it comes to this stuff. This is Collinsworth talking about asking Derek Carr about that photogenic memory of this.
But yeah, with football, it's a blessing for sure. Like, I can literally remember, every coaching point he tells me, you know. So I'll never forget. It was actually in the Minnesota game. We're playing the Vikings. And I checked to this certain run. He's like, if you ever get this look against this coverage in this formation, and he told me this in training camp. He said, just check to this. It'll be awesome. It'll be great. Well, we get here and like week, whatever it is, this is after training camp. We've played a couple games and we're sitting there and I get the look, I get the coverage. I said, this is exactly what he wants. And I checked to it and we missed an assignment. And I think it was a quarterback draw. Actually, I ended up getting tackled and for like 1 yard. And I come jogging off the field after the third down and he's being Gruden, losing his mind and all this kind of stuff. I was like, coach, you told me like 7 weeks ago in camp on Thursday, like you told me to check to this if I ever get this. And he goes, what? And then he came back to me. He's like, I did say that to you, didn't I? I was like, yeah, you did. So yeah, there's been multiple times. And once I did that, he kind of realized that I kind of do remember. So when I check to something, he'll be like, all right, when did I say that? And then, so I'll be like, okay, you told me to do this. Okay. Yeah, we're good. All right. So it's been great.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
That's a really, really great story because it's kind of like, talk about respect. It's like the first time you're able to beat up your dad, you know, like dad's like the first time you call the old man out, you're like, you're a teenager and like you finally get your dad, you know, or younger brother finally beating the older brother. This is Derek Carr. He's like, all right, I've slaved under your system. I've put hours of this tape in and you forgot a check down that you told me to do 7 weeks ago. Like, what better way to get the respect from John Gruden than to be like, yeah, I remember what you told me and I did it regardless whether the play worked or not. I did it, dog.
You know, it's one of those things that I was talking about with BD is Carr overcoached?
I never thought about this until you brought it up. It's a really that's like a whole podcast right there. Is
every single scenario? Yeah, and you talking about? I mean, I don't know if his memory is photogenic or he has a photographic memory. Photogenic. But that's what you said earlier. Photogenic. I was like,
did what? I?
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
I was looking at a picture. I was looking at them in the mirror.
Oh, is that it? Okay. Yeah. You wish you were more photogenic? So with a photographic memory and somebody who's as a control freak as Gruden, is Carr being overcoached? Is he not letting Carr see the play as the play? Or is he – and is Carr just is remembering what he's been told to do in certain situations?
Too much robot, not enough playa.
That's what kills me about this, because my concerns with Derek Carr are not things that I have not seen from him before. And that's what irks me about his play now. Not that he's not doing well now, but if he can do better, because there's the things that are holding him back from reaching that elite status are things that he's already shown that he can do.
Yeah.
And I just think that with his memory and his, like you said, wanting to be a good soldier and just doing everything that Gruden tells him to do, maybe he needs to be a little bit more of a maverick. Maybe there's a little stabler in him.
Yeah, that would be a tongue lashing for sure from Gruden on the sideline.
Yeah, I'm winning, bitch.
If he went, hey, I really wonder if what would happen if Derek Carr, like Gruden calls just like a fucking like power ISO or something,
bullshit,
right? Basic run play.
Yeah.
And Carr just says like, fuck that. Rugs, go deep. 50-yard touchdown, pass, touchdown, right? Let's say it works. Is Gruden stoked or pissed?
Gruden's pissed, but he's not going to say anything because he wants the credit. So he's like, you know, he's going to be like, he's going to have that look on his that scowl. But look, it was that Varsity Blues when they were gonna pass the ball in instead of handing it off to running back. It's like, ah, fuck it. And he called the running play. That's the shit that I'm talking about. Like, dude, you don't have to be the good little soldier all the time if you see something different. Because Gruden is a great mind. He's like we talked about how predictable his freaking play calling is, but it works because it's good.
Yeah.
There's certain things that you see. You got to, you know, fucking take it out of the package and play with it a little.
Yeah. Like one of these plastic covered dolls of yours. Don't take it out. It loses its value. Loses
value.
When you take it out of the original package.
You know how hard it is when you're seven? And
people who haven't seen 40-year-old Virgin has no idea what's happening.
Yeah.
Again, this great interview with Collinsworth. I highly recommend you all check it out. Last thing he talked about was Gus Bradley. And again, we can't stress how crucial Gus Bradley's role will be, negative or positive, right? If Gus Bradley gets his offense together or defense together and gets it semi-approaching average, we've got a great season ahead of us. If he makes it top 10 above average, gets like genuinely thinking Super Bowl, if they can do that, right? So Derek Carr was asked, all right, what do you, you know, you're going against Gus Bradley's defense in OTAs. What do you make of it? Here was his answer.
But when I got to watch him in person, you know, most defense coordinators, you know, they're on the scheme and they, you know, you got to make this check if it's this split or this motion, you know, that thing. And he's on that stuff. But I haven't seen a defense coordinator as locked in and I would say hold people to such a standard of their fundamentals on each snap and the tackling and the fit. And I mean, he is on them every single play. And it is impressive because the way he can bring it every day and the way he brings his energy every day. And you know, I'm sure you've talked to Gus and
sure.
he's literally that same way every second of the day. And I'm like, I don't know how you do it, man. Like, yeah, that's impressive, you know, and I'm an ultra positive guy and I can't be that way every day. You know, that's impressive, Gus, but he is exactly who I thought he was, but it, beyond the scheme and beyond the past and beyond all those things and going against him and him forcing you to check the ball down. And it's frustrating and it's annoying because they're playing cover three, but the way they do it, you have to check it down. It's annoying. But the thing with him that has been the most impressive is in the on the field play after play, down after down consistency of him making sure everything is correct. And I've just been blown away by that he can really bring it like that every day.
So a couple things. We're hearing a lot of what we expected, less focus on instituting a ton of different schemes,
yeah,
a show of different packages, less volume, more focus on fundamentals, right? Like instead of worrying about 17 different plays we're going to do, let's do some tackling drills. Like I love Gus Bradley. I can just imagine Gus Bradley and that big wide brim hat of his walking around the practice facility. And it's going to Yannick Ngakoue just like stopping him. No, drop your shoulder a little more here. Abram, hey, stop. Plant your feet and then deliver the hit. Like just every single minute fundamental defense, just going through every single guy nonstop with that high energy that Carr was talking about. That is music to my ears. Mwah, yep. Chef's kiss.
That's what we need. That's what we needed. That's that Bruce Lee line. You shouldn't be afraid of the guy that knows 10,000 kicks. You're afraid of the guy that did one kick 10,000 times.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, we don't have to have all these different calls. We're going to have this many calls, but we're going to get these calls right. We're going to do these calls properly. We're going to line up where we need to be. We know our assignment, and we're going to do proper technique every single play. And Carr said it. Every single play, he's on their technique. He sees everything. He's on them every single time. Here. We need to get this done. Be efficient and do the right technique and be where we need to be and know our assignments. And that's what you need from a teacher. That's what a teacher does.
I also love how Carr talked about how annoying it was that he has to keep doing checkdowns because they're in cover three.
Yeah, you gotta get, there's nothing else to do.
I love that because like that's kind of what we want, right? Like I'd rather put the onus on like our very expensive linebackers covering like the flat then worry about going deep over like Arnett or Abram or something like that, right? Like keeping everything in front of you, back to fundamentals, mm-hmm. proper tackling, just go three deep, force them to check down, tackle properly. Just keep the giant plays. Hope, you know, the offense can make mistakes eventually, get some of those turnovers, playing mm-hmm. fast, playing with good fundamentals, and we'll get out schemed, right? Because that's the flip side of the coin is if it's a simple, predictable offense, it's easier to scheme around, but we're not beating ourselves. And like, that's where our defense should be at this point is limited mistakes, good fundamentals. Don't beat ourselves.
Yeah. Make the offense work for it. Make the offense earn it. Don't give it to them. Yep. And one thing too, is a lot of the quarterbacks in this league, regardless of their stats, not all of them are as disciplined as Derek Carr. And they're going to check down. They're going to fuck this. I don't fucking wing this shit. Fuck it.
Yeah.
And that's when we get the turnovers. That's when you get those big plays on the defensive side.
Beanie Williams said it perfectly. Like Patrick Mahomes wasn't willing to do it. And so we got to win, right? We won an Arrowhead because he's like, you know, we're
I'm going to force the ball down the field. Yeah.
And he forced it, right? Ready to do some what up winbacks?
Yes, sir.
All right. Dutch Master 710. Raiders are terrible with their money. Come on now. Lackluster free agents, to say the least. And I believe we paid Khalil Mack salary by paying LaMarcus Joyner, Trent Brown, Rashawn Melvin, plus that $20 million that gave Carl Nassib is atrocious, considering how much help our defense needs. So this was last week when I was talking about how, yeah, our talent evaluation is bad, but we got pretty good accountants. Like, the Raiders are never in cap trouble. Like, never, ever in cap trouble. We'll never have a ton of dead money on. When our offensive line got old and injury prone, we moved on. Not saying it was the right move getting rid of Rodney, but I understand money-wise why they made those decisions. It's just they just put the money in the wrong place. Wrong players. Like, all these expensive guys that we picked up, at the time, they didn't sound crazy, really, right? Like, no. Nick Witowski, Corey Littleton, like, okay, that's what we should pay for a player that's performed as well as Littleton did with the Rams and stuff like that. Like, again, let's say Yannick Ngakoue completely falls apart for us, right? Like, worst case scenario. We're not going to retroactively say, oh, I knew it. I saw it coming the offseason when they signed him that contract. Like, no, we're all like, yeah, that's a good deal for a guy that gets that many sacks. So two separate problems. The Raiders are good with their money. They've proven historically to be good with their money. Poor at talent evaluation. Two different problems that makes it look like, you know, the problems are elsewhere.
Yeah, it's not the last couple of years of the Al Davis regime where he was just throwing money everywhere. He wanted to get a winner, wanted to catch lightning in the bottle before he kicked. But
the NFL literally changed their rookie pay structure because of what we gave Jamarcus Russell.
Oh, like, God.
The NFL has changed forever because
that's just giving me heart. That just gives me heartburn.
Gave to Jamarcus.
Gives me fucking heartburn.
Jeff Garrison, we're way better now than last season, because we were talking about, do we think we're better at this point for this next season than we were at this point last year for the last season? We're way better now than last season. The biggest difference is Bradley and his coaches. Couldn't agree more, Jeff.
Agree.
Hudson was not very good last season. Littleton is going to shine. The entire team is way better this season than last. Every position is better this season. I'm not willing to concede that our five starting offensive linemen would be better than last year's starting offensive linemen. They obviously didn't play well because they all got hurt, moved around, et cetera. So I'm not willing to concede that yet. But I think the optimism is there, but it's more of the same, right? Like, we know the ceiling of some of our younger, highly drafted players. They just haven't shown it yet. So there's always that reason for optimism every single year, and that's still the case now. But a couple of things that we're unquestionably better at: depth and playmakers on defense, on paper. Whether they deliver or not is the question.
Yeah, the main thing that I look at when I read this comment here is the difference between Bradley and the coaches. And we talked about it just a little bit ago. If someone comes in here and simplifies everything, and I'm not talking like, you know, fucking high school football simplification. I'm talking, you know, still an NFL defense.
Yeah.
But focuses on the fundamentals, making sure we're doing what we need to do, we're where we need to be, and we know what we're going to do during the play. It's a big difference. I can see us being in the high teens defensively. I still do think that there is a lack of overall talent in a lot of places. But we have spots where we've filled in people, and hopefully I'm wrong, and people just start playing off their asses.
Yeah. Last one. And this one, kind of a random one, but it's only like 10 letters or 10 words, but it got me thinking. Dominic Maldonado commented, Willie Snead is going to be a sleeper this year. Now, of all the free agents, all the acquisitions, all the trades, all the moves, the Willie Snead pickup was probably the quietest out of any of them, because he's probably not going to start, right? He's basically a Hunter Renfro-ish type role, and we love Renfro.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the moves that we made, he seems like the least impactful. And of all the wide receivers, he's the one, I think, with the lowest ceiling that no one's really talking about. Like, we're hoping Ruggs and Edwards take a big step forward, and we believe they can.
Yeah, Zay Jones, maybe.
Well, Zay Jones gets a ton of love. Like, Derek Carr brought up Zay Jones like three times that in that Collinsworth interview, and how he's like, yeah, talking about who's some of the hardest working guys. Like, when you know, when practice is over, who's working with Carr? Darren Waller and Zay Jones, right? Like John Brown, I'm thinking he can be the next, you know, Nelson Aguilar for us this next season. Like, he, like, Willie Snead is never talked about, never mentioned, never brought up. I wonder if we are all sleeping on Willie Snead a little bit, because it wasn't like he was a bad slot receiver.
No, I mean, and when he made his most noise was with the Saints, and you have in that Saints offense, you had to be where you were supposed to be, because, you know, Breeze didn't have a shotgun arm.
Yeah.
He was putting the ball. He was placing it. It was timing. Be where you're supposed to be. Catch the ball when it's there. And that's also a Gruden offense. So it makes sense that he can be trusted. I know Gruden probably trusts him a lot because he's a veteran in the league. He played for Peyton, and him and Sean Payton, you know, are connected. And, you know, maybe Derek Carr trusts him too, because he, you know, he runs good routes, and he's going to be where he's going to be. And it's not this, it's not the Texans type offense where, you know, running around and scrambling and throwing the ball deep and stuff like that. So, I mean, from that perspective, yeah, it's possible.
I just want to succeed because he has, because he's Willie Snead the fourth.
The fourth.
And I just love seeing those Roman numerals at the end of it. Like, that's why I want Henry Ruggs the third to succeed. I'm Randall John Clifford the second. You know, it just sounds prestigious. It just looks great on a jersey having like that one V there, you know? It's like,
he's from like a lineage of royalty.
Yeah, like from a long line of strong English wide receivers.
Sneeds.
You know?
From a long line of Sneeds.
All right, well, that's it for us. Until next time, knock on wood if you're with me.
Yeah, sorry about that mic snafu. I'm in Las Vegas. We recorded this when I was in Las Vegas, and the hotel internet went out, and then the mic switched from my actual microphone to the computer microphone. Sorry about that. But still, thanks for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Also, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube page. We're going to keep telling you until you do it. A lot of great stuff on that YouTube page. Until next time, later.